Chapter 16 Epilogue. If we must be governed by those whom the billionaires choose to fund, then the social contract really has been ruptured. Charles Fried, Reagan Administration Solicitor General, April 2014. The last millennium of political thought, revolution, and evolution has produced a handful of wealthy societies that have managed to derail capitalism's default setting of plutocratic rule. Many have crafted high-quality Aristotelian democracies, where individual political rights are respected and equal to all others. Not the United States. Many feature expansive voting rights and proportional representation, where every vote is meaningful. Not the United States. Many feature voter sovereignty, where policy outcomes reflect majoritarian preferences clearly heard and readily heeded by lawmakers. Not the United States. Many are responsive to middle-class aspirations for steadily rising prosperity. Just as Adam Smith dared hope in 1776 in An Inquiry into the Nature and Causes of the Wealth of Nations, they have harnessed the wondrous mechanism of capitalism to widely broadcast the gains of growth. Not the United States. Many moderate passions in the pursuit of the common good, rejecting tribalism. Not the United States. Today, the low quality of America's democracy is primarily a consequence of transitory majorities of conservative justices on the Supreme Court, beginning with Buckley versus Valeo in 1976. For partisan gain, they have rejected originalism in the key area of political corruption, epitomized by the Roberts Court's McCutcheon versus FEC 2014 decision, in which the majority concluded that political donations to purchase ingratiation and access is a central feature of democracy. Thus, they have proudly made industrial-scale vote-buying and the ensuing cynicism and tribalism the central features of American democracy. The Buckley era has empowered the fittest 50 to move the nation backward toward the default setting of capitalism. Average Americans are now firmly in the grip of Piketty's endless inegalitarian spiral. The consequence, according to Brookings Institution researchers, is that a majority have come to believe that the American dream is dead, that hard work and determination are no guarantee of success. Their grim prognosis will not soon or easily be lifted, notes Robin Wigglesworth, U.S. Markets Editor of the Financial Times. In the long term, it is not inconceivable that the political landscape shifts away from corporate interests and the U.S. re-embraces the trust-busting zeal of Teddy Roosevelt, but it certainly looks a distant prospect today. Improving political equality begins with the Supreme Court. Ending the spiral to resuscitate the American dream begins with the Supreme Court, where all issues involving pay-to-play and political equality fall within its purview. Its powers under judicial review are a settled matter. That means the corruption of pay-to-play is more amenable to remediation over time, for example, than the slavocracy that confronted Abraham Lincoln in 1861. True, the anti-majoritarian U.S. electoral and governance architectures pose the same barriers to political equality today as in the spring of 1861. But judicial review offers a lifeline to future reformers that was unavailable to Lincoln because the Constitution unquestionably embraced slavery. In contrast, both the Founding Fathers and the Framers' original intent unquestionably was to deny a constitutional shield to the political corruption inherent with pay-to-play. Raising the quality of American democracy hinges on more than ending pay-to-play. While meaningfully amending the Constitution is problematic, the Supreme Court can unilaterally implement needed seminal reforms enhancing political equality. Indeed, other democracies have rather routinely improved the quality of their governance by revamping antiquated practices, including nations such as the UK, whose democracy predates the US. To elevate individual political rights so that citizens are fairly heard and heeded, for instance, upgrades by higher quality democracies have featured adoption of unicameral legislative systems to render irrelevant malapportioned legislative bodies like the U.S. Senate. Moreover, the upgrades have facilitated adoption of proportional representation electoral systems, which, in the process, eliminated the severely anti-democratic phenomenon of wasted votes caused by single-member legislative districts, inevitably gerrymandered. And many have eliminated winner-take-all plurality electoral systems in favor of binary runoff structures. These reforms were adopted precisely to avoid American-style outcomes, where majoritarian opinion is degraded and popular vote losers leapfrog over winners to become national leaders, sometimes by judicial edict, as in banana republics. These upgrades abroad have ensured that public authority to act and the consequences for such acts are clear to voters, avoiding an American-style miasma of diffused political accountability. The complexity and tangled authority forced by the U.S. Constitution guarantees opaqueness in an age when higher quality democracies emphasize transparency. A Supreme Court agenda to build a higher quality democracy. An aspirational agenda for a visionary Supreme Court beyond ending pay-to-play includes the following items. Supreme Court appointment. Life tenure populates the court with justices whose formative years, education, and career experiences often leaves them quite far removed from their legal contemporaries or society. Term-limiting Supreme Court justices is the best remedy. Another upgrade would require legislative supermajority confirmation of all judicial appointments, including the Supreme Court. Over some years, that step would populate the American judiciary with less strident or partisan justices. In contrast, the conservative Justice Gorsuch was confirmed in 2017 by a bare majority of senators, representing a minority of Americans. At a minimum, justices of the Supreme Court should adopt the same ethical code of conduct applicable to all other federal judges. It should become de rigueur to place assets in blind trusts, and recusal should be triggered in cases involving familial or commercial connections or cases involving interests with whom justices interact meaningfully. The campaign finance system. Recriminalizing vote buying will require complementary reforms to the American campaign finance system, drawn from the spending limits and electioneering funding practices of higher quality democracies. Voting rights. Ending the income bias should incentivize voter participation. That can be encouraged with steps to expand voting rights by reversing rulings of the Roberts Republicans, including Crawford and Shelby County, which disenfranchised millions of citizens. The Senate. Article 5 of the Constitution poses a formidable barrier to democratizing the Senate. An option is to draw on Australian law. Its Senate suffers irreparably from American-style malapportionment. It has a U.S.-style equal state representation structure. But Australians ameliorate its undemocratic feature in this fashion. A relatively large number of senators, 12, represent each state, importantly selected through a proportional representation electoral system. Australia also provides representation in the Senate for its national capital, Canberra. Electoral College. The anti-democratic Electoral College should be neutered, its members voting only for the winner of the national presidential popular vote. This reform is being implemented by the National Popular Vote Interstate Compact, encouraging states to enact statutes pledging to cast their electoral votes for the popular vote winner. Such action by states with at least 270 electoral votes would de facto eliminate the Electoral College, although state statutes can always be repealed at a later date. Reforming state and local judicial systems. All state and local judicial appointments should be based on merit, appointed by supermajority votes of legislators. The Supreme Court should insist that judgeships be professionalized drawing on the potent mechanism in higher quality democracies. The judiciary is a formal, professional career track, featuring educational thresholds and periodic evaluations. For example, France's rigorous training to become a judge is open only to lawyers and lasts 27 months. Only 5% of aspirants become judges. Cornell International Law professor Mitchell Lasser explains that judges abroad have spent years in school taking practical and theoretical courses on how to be a judge. They are professionals. The rest of the world is stunned and amazed at what we do, and vaguely aghast that our state judges can rise to their positions through elections rather than highly specialized, demanding training. Additionally, judicial recusal from cases involving familial or commercial connections should be mandated, as should the use of blind trusts for all state and local judges. Reforming state and local electoral systems. With a federal government dominated by the GOP at the moment, steps toward political equality can only be taken at state and local levels. The Brennan Center estimates that 5 million eligible voters are affected by voter ID laws and the like, their votes potentially lost to partisan disenfranchisement. Yet that figure is dwarfed by the 60 million or so Americans whose votes were wasted in 2016, cast for losers in single-member legislative districts. Their preferences are ignored, the voters unrepresented because of the undemocratic American electoral structure. In contrast, all voters' voices are heard in higher-quality democracies abroad through their PR electoral systems. The Supreme Court should mandate PR for all American legislative elections. Another reform is binary runoff elections, or the increasingly popular ranked choice mechanism, in instances involving a single office, such as mayor or governor. States can also abolish gerrymandering on their own initiative by adopting independent entities to design legislative districts. It is possible that the Supreme Court's Gill v. Whitford ruling, due in 2018, could even mandate that states minimize gerrymandering. And they can upgrade by adopting a further handful of reforms, including open primaries, as in Louisiana, Washington State, and California. Election day registration, and automatic voter registration of applicants for driver's licenses, as in Oregon, California, West Virginia, and Vermont. That innovation tripled new registrations in Oregon. 9 other states and the District of Columbia have approved the reform. Finally, states and communities can draw on experience in Connecticut, Maine, New York City, and the like, and adopt electioneering spending caps, complemented by public funding of elections. Fact-based media. In today's media market, factual information struggles to compete with alluring and flamboyant fake news, with more Americans consequently coming to distrust than trust mainstream media. The seminal responsibility of media as sources of factual information for voters distinguishes them as a class uniquely valuable to democracy. There are 3 steps appropriate to restore the centrality sought by James Madison of nonpartisan, fact-based information to American democracy. First, the fairness doctrine should be resurrected, applicable to both broadcasters and the pops, each media form the product of public investment. Proprietors in both media industries should be held accountable for meeting community standards, for the accuracy of the information they disseminate, and for reflecting the doctrine in their presentation of political and policy issues. That means fake news, abusive content, hate speech, violent content, and content that fails community standards should be denied access to the public space provided by broadcasters and the pops. Nor should online payment proprietors permit access by entities that disseminate such content. While these steps would leave the vast bulk of information on the pops unaffected, objectionable content would be denied the public space. Meeting required quality standards as truth-tellers would include broadcasters and the pops evaluating all content ex ante, the veracity of material verified. The success of the Fairness Doctrine teaches the powerful lesson that Dissemination of factual information sustained by content filtration does not equate to Orwellian censorship. Second, social media should end collection of personal information from users without explicit and clear permission. Third, the POPs should support investigative journalism and ideally initiate their own factual reporting. Upgrading American democracy. The goal of these reforms is to upgrade the quality of American democracy by easing the political grip of the fittest 50. They view the U.S. economy as a zero-sum game, where the gain of others, in the form of higher wages, for instance, is only achieved at their expense. Adam Smith recognized this syndrome in 1776, noting that masters, employers, are always and everywhere in a sort of tacit but constant and uniform combination not to raise the wages of labor. Many have proven unwilling to support the same opportunities for others that America availed them. Most are market literalists, yet ignore the tapestry woven by Adam Smith, who insisted that capitalism flourishes best when featuring regulation encouraging responsible business stewardship and citizenship. The fittest 50 reject the seminal role envisaged by Smith and the higher quality democracies for the business community as guarantors of a broadly based prosperity. America confronts formidable structural challenges to productivity and growth, as explored by economists such as Northwestern University professor Robert J. Gordon. Those challenges are rendered forbidding by opposition from the fittest 50 and their GOP acolytes to higher wages and to the types of public investment that have been instrumental to growth in the past, like education and R&D. They view demands for higher wages, an end to offshoring of high-wage jobs, closing foreign tax havens, and meeting government safety, health, labor, and environmental standards as impositions. Fierce opposition to taxes by the GOP on behalf of the fittest 50, for example, is the reason American families confront the highest out-of-pocket child care costs of any wealthy democracy. According to the OECD, Americans spend 28% of net family incomes for toddler child care, nearly double the share in Australia, and triple the 9% share in France or Germany. Embracing the fittest 50 agenda has seen the Republican Party forsake political moderation. Their extreme tactics in pursuit of this agenda have emptied the American political center, diminishing the ballast provided by a broad, moderate core of swing voters. The virtues of prudence, acknowledged limits, invective-free debate, balancing competing principles, openness to new facts, and respect for opponents have become scarce in American politics. Public policy devised by facts-driven debate, dialogue, compromise, and the crowning virtue of majoritarian opinion, fairly heard and heeded, have been subsumed by intemperance and a Machiavellian pursuit of political gain. Pay-to-play and the ensuing polarization has made American democracy the farce feared by James Madison. The U.S. government now resembles that of India, as noted by Tom Kolbach in the Sydney Morning Herald. Look at the United States and India, where partisan politics has ruled out any serious attempt to reform even the most obvious problems. This Australian columnist is one in a chorus of foreign observers perceiving America as a nation in decline. With middle-class economic opportunity eroding and politics bedeviled by pay-to-play, American exceptionalism has faded apace with its shrinking middle class. Vote-buying, economic immobility, stagnant wages, and the loss of a moderate, fact-based political center mock that pretension. Here is an assessment by Spiegel journalists. It has reached a point in its history when the obvious can no longer be denied. The reality of life in America so greatly contradicts the claim, albeit one that has always been exaggerated, to be the greatest nation on earth, that even the most ardent patriots must be overcome with doubt. And these comments were written before the 2016 election. The only preceding period in American history of such political division was the antebellum era, when slave owners insisted that their constitutional rights be respected. Then, as now, America lacked a visionary Supreme Court. The issues may be different. Today, plutocrats seek economic gain by lowering the quality of democracy rather than economic gain by perpetuating slavery. But the outcome is the same. Political and economic equality are suppressed, democracy demeaned. Here is how neoconservative Robert Kagan explains the consequence of Republicans pursuing the fittest 50 agenda. The party's wild obstructionism, the repeated threats to shut down the government, the insistence that compromise was betrayal, taught Republican voters that government, institutions, political traditions, party leadership, and parties themselves were things to be overthrown, evaded, ignored, insulted, laughed at. Charles Darwin would recognize the pathology immediately. In The Descent of Man, he described the disadvantage of such tribal division. An advancement in the standard of morality will certainly give an immense advantage to one tribe over another. A tribe including many members who, from possessing in a high degree the spirit of patriotism, fidelity, obedience, courage, and sympathy, were always ready to aid one another and to sacrifice themselves for the common good, would be victorious over most other tribes. Higher quality democracies abroad are characterized by unity of purpose, compromise, and collaboration. Their communitarian comity yields more advantageous societies that better fulfill the potential for citizens to meet their aspirations and achieve happiness. High-quality democracies are ballasted by large centers of moderate voters. They flourish because governance is focused on the greater good. Voter aspirations for tranquility and widespread prosperity combine with political equality to translate into government policy. Their citizens are able to overcome a natural distrust of others and actualize the moral sentiments in mankind's better angels. That is how these democracies are able to perform on a higher plane than America and suppress the darker aspects of mankind's nature and of capitalism. It is how they succeed where America fails in sustaining societies that realize the greatest good for the greatest number. Turnover on the Supreme Court will eventually put that desideratum in reach of America. Recriminalization of vote buying in particular will begin the process of replacing a pathology that Harvard biology professor E.O. Wilson terms individual selection with a society featuring empathy and shared mutual aid. Like the Warren Court's support of civil rights, it will take courage for future court majorities to subordinate the fittest to Aristotle's landless. But in doing so, these giants will begin the process of rebuilding the moderate center of American democracy and realizing the full promise of the Founding Fathers' remarkable preamble to the Declaration of Independence. This concludes the reading of Billionaire Democracy: The Hijacking of the American Political System by George R. Tyler. Copyright 2018 by George R. Tyler. This book was read by William Hughes. This unabridged recording was published by arrangement with Ben Bella Books and was produced in 2018 by Blackstone Audio, Inc., which holds the copyright. Neither this recording nor any portion of it may be reproduced or used for any purpose without prior written authorization from Blackstone Audio, Inc. If you would like to obtain a monthly update telling you about new releases, call 1-800-SAY-BOOK. That's 1-800-729-2665. For a complete listing of our titles, visit our website at www.downpour.com. Thank you.